League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hockey back together, Millard and Shannon. We were in PEI on the weekend in person.
You were ghosting me though.
I did not ghost you. I hung out with you.
You did?
And we were back to back at one dinner. There was all kinds of NHL alumni there and current players as well. What a spot in the middle of summer to talk some hockey with legends and current players.
Well, it's a great, first of all, a great cause for the Boys and Girls Clubs of Summerside on PEI. Every once in a while, I still am in awe of meeting great players and have a blast doing it. and quite frankly, I'm always amazed when they know my name. So, which is kind of a real plus when it comes to the business. And then you can actually have great conversations with them about times in their career. Because if you had done it with them while they were playing, they would have had no time for it because they're so focused on winning, right?
Yeah.
Now they can talk about it. Now they like talking about it. But just a blast to see, Wendell and Dougie Gilmore and Daryl Sittler, who still got it. And then sat beside Larry Robinson at dinner one night and had a hoot talking about the 1979 Stanley Cup final, where Larry actually scored a goal in overtime in game four that they said didn't go in the net, and wanted to talk to him about it. And we had just had a great gab about it.
Hey, what happened? It did go in the net.
It did go in the net, but they said there was no video review. Obviously, it was 1979. We were barely into color by then. Then about 8 minutes later, Serge Savard scores, and then their team's going off the ice, and Larry's still banging on the glass with the goal judge. And I said, Larry, why'd you do that?
I missed those times when you were blaming the goal judge.
The goal judge. I said, I don't remember doing that. I said, no. I watched the video the other night. You were doing it. And then Scotty had to pull you off. It's after the game. You've won the game, and you're still banging on the glass. I was really mad, he said.
I sat beside Doug Gilmore at one of the dinners, and he took down two lobsters like they were nothing, which was just fascinating to watch and telling me stories through the whole time. And I'm always amazed at how slight that man is.
He's not after he ate two lobsters. He's slight. That's okay.
But you think about what he did and how he played the game. It was phenomenal. And then you look at him, and he's shorter than me and lighter than me.
Yeah, and by the way, the Mill River Resort, if anybody ever wants to find a place to vacation in Canada and enjoy some golf and some great hospitality, it is a really, really cool place to go. And there's also a Blue Jay. I know this is a hockey podcast, but there's a Blue Jay affiliation with it because it's owned by a gentleman named Don McDougall. And Don McDougall was one of the very first executives of the Toronto Blue Jays when they moved to Toronto in 1977. And McDougall, at 89 years old, is still running the place, looking great. We had a great couple of chats with him over the weekend. It was it's one of those things, Darren, as you know, when you get the summer off and you try not to work too hard, you look forward to a couple of events. And certainly, what happened at Mill River is one of those things we look forward to.
Got to hang out with Summerside's own Noah Dobson for a day.
I got to hang out with Doug McLean.
I was with Noah, and he was saying...
I had Doug McLean.
Sharing how everybody's congratulating him about the transition to Montreal and the new contract. And they always come up to him and his wife, and they say, congratulations. And he says, oh, I got married 2 weeks ago as well. But it's a hockey province, right?
That's right.
forget the nuptials. Congratulations on the deal. Stan Bowman standing by, the Edmonton Oilers general manager. What do you want to get into beyond the obvious Connor McDavid situation?
Well, I mean, I think that this is a team that since the final has ended has gone through some change and has
transition, right?
Yeah, and really in so many ways, this is Stan's first real summer to affect that change because he joined about a year ago this week. And is now in a position to have his fingerprints on this franchise. So it's going to be fascinating to see what they do. And obviously, we have to talk about Connor and his deal and how easy was it to do the Evan Bouchard deal and a few other things about probably the most important position on the hockey club other than Connor, and that's goaltending.
Well, and don't forget about the tampering possibility from that men's league team in Newmarket that had Leon and Connor out the other night.
Can you imagine being out there and those two guys show up? Oh, my goodness.
How about the referees? Like, just refereeing that game. You're just trying to get through an 8 o'clock skate on a Tuesday night, and there's those two.
Yeah, there's those two. They love the game. That's a good sign, man.
They do. McDavid and Draisaitl lost, by the way. They'll try to bounce back. At some point.
That's two games in a row.
I know. It's crazy. Stan Bowman coming up on Millard and Shannon on 100% Hockey.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
Catch up with Stan Bowman. You got to start with the obvious. Are you worried that Leon and Connor are going to stay with that rec league team in Newmarket? They were out there practicing and skating the other day.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of funny seeing all the coverage of that online. So I feel like I don't even need to be there watching because they're covering every shift they do, which is, I guess, the way it is nowadays in 2025. But summer skates, and it's okay. Don't put too much credence in how they're doing or how many goals they're scoring just yet.
You know, there is a bit of a revelation for me that to know that guys as serious as those two are and as good as they are, they still love the game enough to just go out and play, Stan. That's cool.
I think that's kind of what makes our sport great. I find that's pretty common with a lot, maybe not every hockey player, but a lot of them just enjoyed the game. And they, I mean, it wasn't too long ago they were playing for the highest stakes, you know, in the Stanley Cup final. And here they are now still training hard. And I guess that's what makes them the great players that they are.
So on that topic, it has been about a month since the Stanley Cup final ended. When you consider that you have three Stanley Cup rings, what was it like to be on the other side?
Yeah, that was tough. Like I remember back to when we beat Boston in 2013. I remember talking to Peter Chiarelli the beginning of the next year, and it was right around training camp, and I was just commenting on how short the summer had been, and you know, and he laughed. He said, well, it was just a summer, it was just as short for us, but we didn't win anything, you know, so it's a little bit tougher being on the losing end. So now I know what that feels like. So you expend all that energy and that effort, and you get all the way so close, but not all the way. So it's you know, it definitely leaves a different feeling. But we, you know, you try to look at it with some perspective now that some time has passed. And We did have a great season, and we had a great run there for a while, came up a couple games short, but yeah, I think it shows that we've got a great group. We're close, but I think the other thing is you appreciate how hard it is to win, and a lot of things have to go your way. Florida played great. I mean, certainly hats off to them. They deserved it. They played great. We played great too. We're just not quite there. So I think it's a recognition for how hard it is to win the Stanley Cup. You can have a great team, and I really like the way we played. Just wasn't our year.
A lot's happened since the Stanley Cup was presented, but your first full year in Edmonton, what did you learn about the organization?
Incredibly passionate fan base. They love the Oilers, and I'd heard a lot about it. Like, I was watching it the previous year, you know, from a distance, just watching the fans go crazy. And, you know, I had heard that the fans are just fanatical about the Oilers. And I said, yeah, most people say that about their fans, you know, but you get there and you realize it really is true. I mean, everybody there is an Oilers fan. 100% of the people in the city support the Oilers, and they get so excited for the game. So that was a lot of fun, just being part of the community and watching them rally around the team. You know, I think they showed it a lot on TV during the playoffs, just those fans outside and how excited they get watching all the games. So it was awesome. I enjoyed every minute of it. I had a blast. You know, we had a fun season, and we came up short. So this year, you know, we want to find a way to get two more wins in the final.
What did you learn about your organization?
Well, I didn't know a lot of the people. Like, when I came in kind of late, it was probably around, you know, late July last year. So I just sort of inherited the staff. I guess my first takeaway was some great people here. Like, I really was impressed with the front office group and scouts and the training staff and everybody. Like, sometimes you come into an organization, you don't know, you know, I'd been in Chicago for a long time, so essentially everyone there I had hired. Whereas in Edmonton, you know, nobody I had hired. So it was totally different, but I walked away incredibly impressed with the group that we have. You know, the support staff and front office group. And then getting to know the players was really fun. It's a whole new group of guys that I hadn't been, you know, didn't have experience with. So that was fun. Like, I got a chance to get to know them on a personal level, as well as watch them up close. So I had a great time. I love the community. I loved Edmonton. I loved everything about our team. So it made it a really fun year.
How do you summarize what you've gone through in the last 5 weeks then?
Well, we wanted to try to make a few changes. Like, I've always felt coming after when we won some of those years in Chicago, I never thought it made sense to bring everybody back. I always like to have a little bit of newness to the group. Whether you win or lose, I think it's important to try to have some guys that weren't part of that group and they didn't experience the long run. So for them, next year is going to be, you know, I think you need some of that newness and that energy to push your group, because especially the Oilers have been a really strong team for years, not like long before I got there, had a lot of long runs in the playoffs. And I think, you know, sometimes you need some different players. And so one of the focus was to try to bring a little bit of youth to our team. I think you need that to help push we have more of a veteran team. I think we've tried to get younger over the last, you know, some of the moves we made, because I think that's important for a team to have some of that energy from players that haven't been through it, haven't been through the grind of a season. And it is a grind. Like, it's hard, you know, you get that stretch from November to February and you just kind of have to get through it. And the veterans have done it many times, so, you know, they sort of understand it. But I think having some new faces that haven't done it is good for your group and kind of push them forward. So that was one of the things we wanted to try to do player wise. And then we had some, you know, coaching changes with some people leaving. So we have kind of a new staff. So coming into this year, actually, I'm kind of excited about it. We have not only some new players, but new staff. So it's going to be not just, I felt like last year was more, you know, I joined late and it was sort of just, let's try to get over the hump one more game, because we got to game 7 the year before. So it was like more of a reprisal. I think now we're trying to not so much look at the past, and we're looking to do something a little bit different this year. We still have all the main players that we did, but I think we're going to have some new coaches and some new energy with our group, which should be fun.
Does it feel like your team now?
Well, sure. Yeah. I mean, it did last year too, but there was that adjustment for me to get acclimated to the organization. And, you know, there's really nothing you can do to accelerate that other than just experience it with them. So I had a great time, but I think you're right. I mean, I'm certainly more familiar and comfortable with everybody now, players, staff, everything. So, it probably feels a little bit, it definitely feels differently than it did 1 year ago. And, that's exciting though. I'm really looking forward to this year's camp. And it'll be a little bit different.
How difficult was it to change goaltending coaches?
That was hard. It was. I mean, I know Dustin had been there for a long time, and I think it wasn't really so much about people doing a bad job. It's just, I think sometimes change is good. And, you know, when you've had one thing for a long time, and, you know, Stu's been there for a few years in a row, and same with Pickard, you know, I just felt maybe a little bit of a different look would be good for our organization. I think sometimes you can get some energy out of change. It doesn't always have to mean that there was horrible reasons for it or why. I just think sometimes change is good, and that was really the thought process that went into that one.
And you're very familiar with Peter Robbie, correct?
I do, yeah. I had Peter in Chicago for a number of years. I think the thing I liked about Peter was, you know, first just spending time with him. You get to know him as a person. He's a fantastic guy. It's fun to be around. I think he's a very collaborative guy, which I liked. I think that's something that will benefit us going forward. And we've got a lot of smart people here in our organization, goaltending wise, you know, like developmentally and even in Bakersfield. And I feel like we can, you know, maybe be a collaborative group a little bit differently than we were. And I think that's going to benefit us. Peter's really strong at that. And I think he's established, always had good relationships with the goalies. I think a lot of it, there's a technical aspect to goaltending without a doubt. But I do think that there's a large part of it that's the mental side and the being able to, I mean, it's the toughest position to play in professional sports, probably. I mean, I guess you could argue quarterback or pitcher in other sports, but I think, you know, similarly goalie is, and I do think a large part of it is just handling the mental stress of that. So you have to have a good relationship with your goalies and to be able to help them through those ups and downs that are inevitable. And I know that Peter has that.
So does that mean that Stu and Cal are the two guys going to camp as the Oilers goalies?
Yeah, that's the way it looks right now. I mean, I guess you never say never, but I think right now, you know, we looked at a lot of different options, and I think there was a lot of good things that we did last year. You know, I understand the external focus and the goaltending. I mean, that's one, getting back to your earlier question, that's one thing I've noticed about Edmonton is there's certainly a lot of focus on the goaltending.
You're being kind, Stan.
Yeah, there's a lot of focus on that. And I understand that. I do. You know, you respect the fans' passion. I think I wouldn't want it the other way around where they were indifferent towards your team. But it certainly does get a lot of attention, probably more so than it deserves. But that's the nature of the beast. And, you know, so we're going to deal with it.
How do you answer the people that did want to change, but will now look at you standing pat?
Yeah, I understand that side of it. I think to change something just to change it, I don't know that I've ever been a big fan of that. You know, just to say, hey, we made a change. I think you have to be confident that the change that you're making is an improvement. And I think when we looked around at the options, I think there was nothing that made sense to give us a better look. So, you know, I do think that we can, I recognize why people feel that way. But also you have to do things that you and your group feel are the most wise moving forward. And that's how we landed where we are now.
There is one more on that.
Go ahead, Darren. Go ahead.
On Pete, is there an edict that you would like for him to implement a strategy, an approach that you're comfortable with or you're familiar with?
One thing I know I'm not strong with is the technicality or the breakdown of a goalie. Like, even going back to when I was scouting, like, I don't know how to make heads or tails of a goalie. Like, if you ever sit down and talk to a goalie coach or a goalie scout, they're watching a different game than you and I are watching. Like, it's very different. So I don't pretend to know those answers, and I'm not going to weigh in on that. I think I'm more into the process that someone goes through, a goalie coach and a goalie go through together to build their game. So like I said, there's number one, establishing that relationship, because the goalie has to feel connected to their goalie coach and be on the same level and know that they're there to try to make them better. So then there's the technical components, which they're going to watch a lot of video. They're going to have, there may be adjustments that, you know, I mean, when I talked, we interviewed through the process, of course, Peter presented his thoughts and sort of the other candidates, like, on things that they think could help our goaltenders. So, I mean, I listened and they all made sense. And I think I'm open-minded to that, but as far as how he goes about that, that's what they're there for. I'm not really going to meddle in any of that. I'm just going to hopefully have them establish like some good communication and collaboration, I guess, would be the best thing that I want to make sure happens. And then from there, you know, the goalie and the goalie coach, at the end of the day, they're accountable for their performance. So I don't want to be telling them what to do, because then it sort of blurs the line. So really they do it the way that they feel is going to prepare the best. And then, you know, we evaluate them accordingly.
It really is amazing when you consider that these two goaltenders have gotten this team to two Stanley Cup finals. And yet there is criticism still. It must amaze you at times when you hear that.
Yeah, I think that's just part of the world that we're living in today. I don't know if it's good or bad. It's the society that we're all part of. And, you know, I think there's a lot of elements to social media that are a big reason for that. I think there's tons of benefits of social media, but there are some downsides too. And I think the fact that that's probably what we're seeing here is there's so much like emotion and there's so much passion, but there's also sometimes just so much noise out there. And I think whereas 20 years ago, there was just as much emotion and noise, but there was really no platform for these people to connect with other people that sort of felt similarly wound up. They just were sort of yelling out their window and nobody was connecting to it. Right now, when someone yells out their window and they can connect to millions of people at one time. And even if they have no credibility and don't know what they're talking about, there's a lot of other people. And that's the world we have to live with. Like, so I don't, you know, we can't sit here and say it's bad, because there's tons of great sides to it. But I think that is the downside, which is the passion and the emotion of the fans and the media has allowed some of this stuff to probably get out of hand. And we didn't really have that, say, 20 years ago.
Is it familiar at all to what you went through 10 years ago when you had Niemi and Darling and Crawford, and there was noise then too? You won. That's be the big difference.
Yeah, that's true. I do think there's like the world has evolved though. There was social media, of course, but it wasn't like there was no TikTok back then. There was no Instagram was different. I feel like there was Twitter. But now I don't know. I just feel like there's just way more. It's like if you took from 10 or 15 years ago and you measured, I mean, I haven't done this, but you measured this sort of engagement that there was then versus now, it's way higher. Yeah. So I think that it's not new, but I think it's definitely amped up to new levels. And that's something we all have to deal with.
Take a break and we'll continue with the general manager of the Edmonton Oilers, Stan Bowman, on 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.
How much have you had been in contact with Connor during the course of this summer? We all know the negotiations are underway.
Yeah, I think when the season ended, the most important thing was just to let Connor and his representatives know that we're ready whenever they are to engage. And, you know, I think, but respectful that don't want to be hounding him and let him come on his own terms. And we sort of respected that and had great conversations with Connor and Judd Moldaver. So like initially right afterwards, but it was more like, listen, just, we're definitely going to talk to you guys. There's no issues as far as that, like having the conversations, but just let us, you know, kind of get into the summer a little bit here. I know he's had a lot of things on his plate, you know, and his personal life. Like, I know Leon's getting married soon. I know they got together with, they've had some other weddings for former players. So there's a lot happening in his life, which is good stuff and fun for him. And we want him to enjoy that and not be, you know, calling him daily saying, hey, when are we going to do the contract? So I think that as we move into the second part of the summer, that'll probably slow down, and then that will happen. So I've been intentionally very respectful of his summer, and I mean, you know, Connor's a tremendous person, amazing hockey player, but a great person too. Like, I think gotten to know him this year, and he's so driven to win, and he's so driven to do whatever it takes to win. I think that's what we love about him as a leader on our team. And I think that's, you know, he's really pushed our group to the heights that we've been able to accomplish the last few years.
You certainly wouldn't want it to be a distraction in October though, would you?
No, that's fair. I think that's fair. I don't want to speak for him. I doubt that would be the case for him either, but I'm not going to.
You'd be asked every day too though, Stan.
What's that?
You'd be asked every day too.
Yes, that's true. That's true. So, yeah, I mean, it's only July here, so it's we're not even in August yet. So I think, you know, last year we got Leon's deal done, I think the first week in September. I'm not saying that's what's going to be. I'm just saying that it is still very early. I understand, you know, that it's been a little bit of time, but really not very much.
Negotiations can be a grind at times, and sometimes they just fall into place. So this seems, I don't want to speak for you, but it seems fairly obvious where you would go. It's just more term. Is that fair?
Yeah, I don't want to get into too much of that. Yeah. I think that's probably out of respect for the process to not really characterize it. But yeah, I think it's certainly going to be a different negotiation. Certainly with some players, you know, there's more focus on the comparables and the market and all that stuff. With Connor, that's not really the focus, right? It's a different conversation. So, yeah, I think that, you know, when we get into that, I'm confident it'll be good. I've known Judd for many years. He does a fantastic job for his clients. I think he's awesome to work with, and I've had many deals with Judd. So, you know, I think that's all looking good.
Was the Bouchard negotiation a grind?
I mean, no more of the grind, I guess, than Leon's was. I mean, I think there's always a process you have to go through when everything looks simple in hindsight, when you're looking back, like, oh yeah, that makes sense. Like, but getting there was sometimes a bit of a winding road, but not in a bad way. It's just, that's the way they go. Right. But Bush had a fantastic season. Like, I came in watching him from outside, thinking like, this guy's a really good player. You know, he had a great playoff the year before I joined. And then I got to watch him close, and he's a very good player. Like, I think he takes too much criticism, I think. And I, you know, I've tried to push back a bit on some of the media that are hard on him. I feel like, you know, I don't think he makes any more mistakes than other guys. It's just when he does, they tend to get highlighted more. Like, I don't know. I don't know why that is. Like, that's one thing that I've never totally gotten a handle on, is why some players tend to get more heat than others. Like, I'm talking really good players. I went through that with Corey Crawford a bit. Like, people used to complain about him, and he was a great goalie. I never understood why, if he would have a bad game or two, he would get so much criticism. And then some of the other goalies who never ended up winning any cups, they seem to be like on this pedestal that they're sort of like, I'm not going to name who they are, but I was curious, like, well, why?
Well, remember Corey's glove hand? Like that, yeah. That was a 2-year process of a talking point.
But I mean, there's a lot of goalies that give up goals to the glove, the high glove, right? I mean, it was always weird. So Bush is kind of the same way, back to your question. You know, he's an amazing player. I don't know why he gets, he has turnovers, but so does everybody. I mean, it's just weird. For some reason, you know, his seem to get magnified, but he does so many amazing things with our group. I mean, he was a huge part of, you know, I think as the year went on, it kind of emerged as like Connor, Leon, and Bush as being sort of the three guys that, I don't know if it was that way maybe in October, but I think once you got to like March and April, May, I mean, those three guys really are the ones that make our team go. And, you know, I think Connor and Leon, it's obvious they've been that way for a long time. And Bush is only, you know, he's what, 25. He turns 26 in the fall. So he's still young for a defenseman. I think he's got a lot of great years ahead of him.
Where's the upside, the ceiling? And does he remind you of anybody?
It's a good question. I was blessed with great defensemen in Chicago too. He's different than Dunk. I mean, Dunk was a little more high tempo, you know. I guess he's probably plays more like Seabrook of those two guys. You know, Seabs is more physical than Bush is, but I think that, I think the biggest thing with Bush is his patience and his confidence, with the puck too. Like, he might have a tough start to a game or to a period, and he can turn the puck over and give up a goal. Doesn't faze him one bit. He just goes back and makes good plays. And I think that's actually a great lesson for something I've tried to tell my kids too, is like, you're going to make mistakes, but it's much easier to live with if you make 3 bad plays and 10 good ones. People just sort of forget about the 3 bad ones. If you make 3 bad plays and 2 good ones, then you're going to get a lot of focus on the bad plays you make, but just go out there and keep playing. I think Bush has really got he's an amazing athlete too. Like, he's very sort of underrated that way. Phenomenal shape. Like, he's very durable. He played through a ton of pain this year. There were some games where this playoffs, I'm talking to the doctor, like, you know, after the game, he's like, I don't know. I don't think Bush is going to be able to go tomorrow. And like, no one ever heard about that, right? That he was really gutting it out, but he just sort of goes out there and plays. By the time the game rolls around, he just says, I'm fine. You know, like, no problem. I'm going to play. So I think he eats a lot of minutes, and I think he stepped up in the playoffs and played on the PK, which he hadn't really done all year, not because he couldn't do it, but more because we didn't want his minutes to get too high. In the playoffs, you don't get as many power plays. So, like, you know, we could afford to get him on the PK, but so that's always the measure really of the elite defenseman, is can they play in all situations? Cause if you can't kill penalties, then, you know, your ability to totally be an all around player is somewhat limited, but I think he stepped up big time in that, and he was great in the playoffs.
You know, you talked about special teams. That obviously that has been a key to success for this organization for the last few years. But does that highlight the fact that you could be better 5-on-5? And how do you fix that?
Yeah, I think it's sort of a tale of two seasons. Like the year that before I got there, I feel like they had a dominant special teams performance. I think their PK was 90-something percent in the playoffs. Sort of like unsustainable.
Only 4 power play goals through the whole playoff, Stan.
Right, which is sort of unfathomable. Great. But I think then the flip side of that was the 5-on-5 play wasn't really great because their power play was great and their PK was great. And they were sort of a special teams team. So I think this year we were kind of not the opposite. We were very good 5-on-5. I think our PK started terribly, got much better. And then it kind of fell off again in the playoffs. And our power play was good and it kind of faded a bit in the second half. And then we had a bunch of injuries the last 6 weeks where we didn't have any of our top guys playing. So it's hard to totally evaluate that. But so I think our 5-on-5 game was pretty good. But I think, you know, if 80% of the game is 5-on-5. So if you're going to be good in one or the other, I'd rather have us be good 5-on-5. And then, you know, you want to be good in everything. But I think because 80% of the game is even strength, you want to make sure that's, and I feel like that was something we were good at last year. So yes, I want to continue that this year, but I'd like to see our power play. You know, we've had a ton of stability there with the same 5 guys, which is very unusual. I think Washington had that years ago when they had Backstrom and those guys for a couple of years in a row. Pittsburgh might have had that, but usually you don't have the same 5 guys for like 3 or 4 years consecutively. It's very unusual. So I think there's sort of 2 sides to that, though. It's good to have that chemistry, but there is also a ton of data for teams to study and to be able to game plan against. So I think that's one of the things that, you know, I'm looking forward to. We have a new guy coming in to run our power play this year, and I think he's going to bring some new ideas. I think we do need that. Like, it's going to be the same 5 guys on the power play, but I think we can throw some new looks at teams, because I think when you have those same guys together for, you know, over 100 games a year for like 3 years in a row, that's a lot of reps that you can sort of figure out how to shut them down. So I think we got to get some new looks there, and I think that'll be fun to watch.
Be honest, I don't even know where I'd start if I was handed your power play.
Well, I think the great news for them is they're all super intelligent players too. I mean, super skilled. Yeah. Like, if you want to be successful on the power play, you have to have skill. You can't just be a worker. But you know, we've got guys that have a lot of different skills. Like, Hyman is excellent net front. He's also great at recovering loose pucks. Like, I think that's a skill. His effort is really good at that. And you got Connor and Leon. Nugent Hopkins sort of gets overlooked maybe, but he's such a – I remember it happened this year. He got hurt at one point. And, you know, he makes it look really easy on those entries. So Connor comes flying up, and then he'll dish it to Nuge. And Nuge always makes the right play, and then – 2 seconds later, we're in our formation, and then he was gone for like, he missed 4 or 5 games. And I remember someone else had that role and they didn't do it nearly as good as him. You start to appreciate him when he's not there, like how easy he makes that look. So yeah, I think what we're and obviously Bush has got the shot. He didn't use it a lot last year, which is maybe one thing we'll talk about, but I think he only had 3 power play goals. I don't think he scored one until maybe March. You didn't have a power play goal. So I think that's an area for improvement there. But I am excited to have a new person, you know, just new set of eyes on it. That's why I say sometimes change is good.
And by the way, Ryan Nugent Hopkins, another one of those guys that played through a lot of pain in the Stanley Cup final, right?
I couldn't believe he played. I mean, he not only played, he scored. He scored that.
And he was taking face really, shots. Taking
yeah, he was taking
a bad wrist.
He was, yeah. He had a broken bone in his hand, and you know, I don't know how he got through it, but he was actually not just playing, but he was effective. So I think you know, you don't see that, you know, that doesn't get talked about too much, and I don't want to make a huge deal of it, but these guys are, they're incredibly professional, and they're very, you know, they fight through a lot of pain for the team. And I think that's why we love having them on the team.
I'm with you. I don't know how Bouchard doesn't score more in the power play than it happened last year with that shot. The strength of it, the accuracy of it, all of it put together.
Yeah, I mean, that was an interesting one. And his first power play goal, I remember, was in Carolina. It was an empty net goal with like a second to go. They had pulled the goalie and we're on the power play. So he really only had two all year long, two power play goals. So that's strange. Like, yeah, I think that's probably not going to happen again. I certainly hope not. But I think we've probably just maybe got too stuck in some old patterns. And, you know, Leon scored so many goals from the side, like almost the goal line, that he's deadly from there. I mean, that's such a hard shot to make. If you ever, he makes it look easy, but if you ever go down there, like in the morning skate and watch him shoot those, cause he practices it. Like, I don't know how he not only gets it on the net, but he gets it in like the top corner, from and, all over, like those long,
and
passes.
He doesn't miss the net. Like no. It doesn't kill your power play. That's the part that jumps out at me too.
Yeah. He's a special player. So, but I think that look we had a lot of, and then like the Hyman, the tip in, you know, the backdoor tip, scored a lot of goals that way. And I think you try to go back to what's working, but I think sometimes you need to try some different things. And I'm hopeful that we can find some looks that are different this year.
We haven't talked anything about Chris Knobloch. What did you learn about your coach this year? And how much discussion have you had in the off season?
We had a lot of discussion like right after the free agency and right after the draft leading into free agency. He was there with us every day, you know, going through with our staff. He was very engaged. And then we had a lot of interviews for the new coaches that we hired. So that first like 10 days of July, we were talking every day and on multiple Zoom interviews. So Chris is a great coach. I love working with him. I think he's fantastic. Like, I mean, I feel lucky that I inherited him because he's the exact type of coach that I would be looking for. Like if we didn't have a coach, his attributes are what I believe are necessary in the game today. Like he's great relationship type guy. Like I think he's fun to work with. And I think the players respect the way that he treats them. And he's got a great understanding of the tactical side, but he doesn't overdo it, which I think he's got a really good feel for that. That's one thing I've learned over time. I think there's some really smart coaches, but they sometimes get way too technical. And at the end of the day, the game is so fast that if you're harping on X's and O's constantly in practice and pregame meetings and during games, and you get your team playing too robotic. Like, I think Chris has a great understanding of it, but he doesn't overdo it. He's really got that well managed, I feel like. So, he's been awesome to work with. Yeah. I love he's very calm too. Like he's able to get through a lot of stressful situations without panicking. And I think sometimes your team can feed off of that. And I think that he's got the right demeanor for this group right now.
What did you think of the remote draft?
I mean, I know it's an unpopular opinion. I enjoyed it. Like I think I did. I mean, as far as for the teams and the staff, it's much easier to operate a draft the way it was this year, just because you have your whole staff in a big room. You know, you're not worried about it's just hard because there's not enough space in a lot of these, you know, in all the drafts I've been to, where you're just so jammed in, you can't really fit all your staff at one table. And it's, so I think I understand the reason the fans don't, or maybe the media certainly doesn't like it. And there is something to be said for us all being together, like in the same city for conversations sort of in the evenings with other managers and their agents and whatnot. So logistically, I understand that. But I think if you're talking about, is it easier to operate as a team? I would say it is. It's much easier to operate the way it was this year. But I understand there's some improvements maybe to make it a better spectacle. I mean, I think that's a fair spend some time on that. But I think, just from our staff, like it was just an easy, it was like the COVID drafts were where you had your staff and, it's more of a logistically easier for us to operate as our staff, but I see both sides of it.
Might have been a different thought process if you had a first round pick though.
True. Yeah, I think that's true. Yeah, we didn't. And that's why, it wasn't a huge focus for us. We didn't pick until I think 83rd.
And you didn't have to go into the draft house and do an interview with your player.
I didn't. So that's true. I might be the wrong guy to ask on that stuff. That's true.
The agents missed you guys. I can tell you that. They were running into each other. They didn't have you guys to bounce things off of.
That's right. That's very much true.
Go ahead, John.
Just a couple of quick hitters for me. Trent Frederick, who you acquired and then now have signed a long-term deal. Are we good? Not that he wasn't any good in the playoffs, but he obviously wasn't near 100%, which is why you believed in the long-term deal with him.
Yeah. I mean, Freddie, that's a good question. Cause I'm sure some people are wondering on that. Number one, like I got to know him. So he came in and he was injured when we got him, which we knew about. Took him a little bit longer to get in the lineup. So I got a chance to spend some time with him, and he got a chance to spend a time with all of our staff. And like, he's just an awesome guy. First of all, like outside of the hockey, he's a guy that you believe in, you want him as part of your team. So I really like the character of Freddie, but that alone is not the reason to sign to a guy to a long-term deal. But I think a couple things about him. Number one, he's a very unique player with the skill set that he has. He's a big guy. He's a physical player. He's not afraid. He's got that intimidation factor where he'll go to the other team's bench and challenge anybody, like, stop messing around with our group. That's something that I find you either have that or you don't. It's really hard to bluff your way through that. Like, that's – and he's just naturally that way. Like, he doesn't – no one has to tell him, you need to go tell the other team to settle it down here. That's just who he is. So I think and he's also got the versatility of playing center and wing. And he's scored, he scored, 18 goals twice in a row at a fairly, younger age. So I think he's got the game in him. And I think when you add all that up, it comes down to he's a very unique player. It's not like if we passed on Frederick, we'll just go get so-and-so, who's maybe a little different, but the same type of player. Not a lot of guys like that out there. There just aren't anymore. We were planning on having some, we had been working on the Ike Howard deal for a long time. I thought we would eventually be able to get him to Edmonton. And we have Matt Savoy, who's going to play a big role on our team next year. So I knew we were going to have a couple smaller guys that I wanted someone with some physicality and some size. So when you add that all up, I think, he's someone that is going to be an important player, and we're going to be happy to have him with our group for years to come.
You're convinced Howard and Savoy will be on the big club next year?
Yeah, well, certainly going to start here. I mean, I think the goal is to see, and if they're not ready, they're not ready. That's okay. Right. I've always tried to reassure people that this is a marathon. It's not just how do they look at the end of October, but we do want to give them the opportunity to essentially show us what they can do. And if they're not quite there, I mean, Savoy had a great season last year in Bakersfield. Like, I was really impressed with his, not just his offensive side, which he did score, but he became a 200-foot player. He was one of our best penalty killers. And he was blocking shots. Like, we would put him out there. We were up a goal late in the game to protect a lead. And he was the guy the coaches believed in, and he got it done. So I think he learned some different skills last year. And he was a huge scorer in junior, so he can score. But he was doing some other things to try to find a role. So I think that's going to serve him well. I mean, we can use him in a lot of different ways this year. And I think that's, for Chris and the coaches to figure out, but we do want to give him a chance.
Felt like the Isaac Howard acquisition was a win for the Canadian markets.
Yeah, yeah, no kidding. Yeah, we were, I mean, it was an interesting process. I had contacted Julian, you know, early on. It would have been right after their season when Julian made that announcement that it didn't look like they were going to be signing him. So I reached out right away. So it took a couple months to get there, but throughout the process, Julian let us talk to, you know, we had to talk to the agent to be able to make sure we could get a deal done and talk to Ike. And, he was excited, like couldn't wait to come to Edmonton. I think that's it was a big moment, I think, for our organization that this kid who's, you know, one of the better American players of his age group, turned out to be a pretty impressive 2004 birth year for the U.S. They've got five or six of those guys already in the NHL at the age of 20. And he's one of them, and he wanted to come play in Edmonton. So I think that's exciting. He's got a ton of energy. He's got a ton of personality. He loves the game. He's a fun loving kid. I think he's going to really have a good experience in Edmonton.
How do you relax for the rest of the summer? Or can you?
Yeah, well, we don't have a ton of work left. Luckily, we still have some things. We're gonna housekeeping items. We're going to probably do a few things internally, staffing wise and that kind of stuff. But player wise, I think our group is pretty stable. So probably try to enjoy a little bit of downtime here, which is kind of nice. You know, before you know it, we're going to be back in training camp, I feel like. So,
What do you do to relax? Do you a golfer? Everybody's playing pickleball these days.
Yeah, I love golf. I haven't played yet this year, but I used to play a ton of golf as a kid. No, I haven't played yet. I hope to get out here in the next few weeks. I grew up in a golf course in Buffalo there when my dad was coaching the Sabres, and we lived our house backed up onto a course. So as a kid, I would play like every day. And
you'd sneak over the I know you'd sneak over the fence at Transit Valley, and you,
there you go.
You would, and then, and so would your dad. So it's okay.
Yeah. No, it's fun. Like that's the fun part of golf is like, if you pick it up as a kid, it's a tough sport. If you try to pick it up as an adult, I think like, luckily I learned it as a kid. So I was a really good golfer when I was younger. Now I don't really play anymore, but that's the hard part because like I used to be able to do all these shots. Like I used to be like I was a good golfer in high school and college, and now I don't play anymore. So it tests your patience, but it is a great game. So I do want to get into that, and I really just spent some time with the family. Like I was separated from my family for most of the year, right? So I didn't get to see them very much, and it's really just more about spending time with them. And if I can get some golf in too, that'll be okay.
Hey, I got to ask you about one person, not affiliated with your club, and this won't be considered tampering. But how happy are you that Jonathan Toews is going to have another crack at playing in the National Hockey League?
Oh, it's awesome. It's a great story. I mean, also go back to Winnipeg, where, you know, it's essentially home for him. And, you know, I've kept in touch with Johnny over the years, just texting him and wishing him well. And I was really happy for him when they announced that he was coming back. You know, I guess I was young, just starting out. I mean, you don't really have the perspective. Like when I first started out, I looked at, you know, Kane and Toews and all these other great players, these Hall of Fame players that I had a chance to work with, like right to start my career. So I don't think I didn't appreciate how special he was as a player and as a leader. And then as time goes on, you have different experiences, you witness things and you realize, you know, he's a special guy. And I know he went through a lot. So to have him to be able to battle through it and to get himself ready to play, I hope it goes great for him. I really do. I do. I have no doubt that he's put the work in to make himself ready to play. So, you know, I wish him the best. He's an awesome guy and have so many fun memories with him.
Breaking in with Kane and Toews, and now you've got Leon and Connor going. You're a blessed man in the National Hockey League, and I hope you're enjoying every minute of it. I know you are.
I am. Yeah, I know. I've been very fortunate. I mean, you couldn't ask for anything more than that. That's what makes it fun. And we're going to keep going.
Stan, thanks for your time.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
It's a great conversation. That was enjoyable. Got a lot of business done during our discussion with Stan.
You know, I think Stan understands that he's in a market now that just demands information. I mean, it's, as you know, Darren, you've been there. It seeps out of the sidewalks in Edmonton, their love and passion for the Edmonton Oilers, love and passion for a team that's gone to the last two Stanley Cup finals. It is quite fascinating to think, though, that, you know, with all Stan's great successes in Chicago, this is the first time he's lost a final. And so he that's another feeling he's had to go through this year.
Howard and Savoie penciled into the lineup already. And well, you need that too. Teams need those entry level contracts along with the influx of talent.
Well, as he noted very subtly, that they were one of the oldest teams. No. Stan, you were the oldest team in the National Hockey League. You have to get younger. I think there are people disappointed that they lost Corey Perry and lost Connor Brown. Both Connor and Corey would tell you that sentimentality has no place in our game. And they both got great deals, one in Los Angeles and one in New Jersey, which is great for them. And it gives now Stan an opportunity to put some new faces in that lineup that really still in many ways is trying to figure out how to recover from losing Broberg and Holloway on the offer sheets last summer. That was Stan's biggest issue early on, was the offer sheets. And I just think, you know, he had to be pragmatic about it. And you know, the other one is the goaltending. What are they, you know, sounds like they're going to go to camp with Pickard and Skinner. That might disappoint a few Oiler fans. But at the end of the day, it should not surprise many people either.
Does it you?
A little bit. It does a little bit, but at the same. But here's the other thing: I think Stuart Skinner is a really good goaltender, and I think probably, and I don't want to put words in Stan's mouth, but I think the change in goaltender coach is going to be a huge help to Stu Skinner.
Why do you say that?
Because I think the philosophy that, and you can see the philosophy that they had with Dustin Schwartz as the goalie coach, was prevention through blocking and positioning and not enough athleticism. I think Stu Skinner's a really good athlete, and I think that there's hopefully a bit of a hybrid between the two that allows athletic goaltending to come back into play in Edmonton. I think we saw that with Calvin Pickard. He used much more because he was just, quite frankly, too old to reteach. But Stewart was...
There was a tweak there. I thought there was a real good job done with Pickard, and then there was blame put on for not advancing Skinner,
right,
which is strange because did an amazing job with one guy, and then you're being criticized about the other, and it's the same goalie coach.
But I think that was really one of the problems. That's something that I witnessed over the last 3 years with Skinner, is that, you know, he was trying to always be in position, and hunt, and most of the issues were not about positioning, but about athletic play. It's one of the reasons Jordan Binnington has become such a great goalie. He's been able to compromise between positioning and athleticism.
I put Aiden Hill into that. He's a great positional goaltender, but when it goes sideways or there's a broken play, there's a make it up as you go along aspect to it.
To be able to ad lib, to take something from another sport, you have to be able to hit the curveball. And hopefully that this year with Peter Aubrey there, it will give Skinner a chance to hit the curveball.
Well, you're a big baseball guy today.
Well, you know, baseball is kind of fun to watch these days in the city.
Blue Jays just win every game at home.
Yeah, but this is 100% hockey, not 100% baseball. Mm.
Where are you and Jeff Bukaboom off to?
Well, that's a good question. Buk and I have been traveling together for the last 3 weeks, so I might phone him and ask him if he wants to just come over for coffee.
I talked about Doug Gilmore and how slight he is and played in the National Hockey League at such a high level and impactful. Bukaboom's like a big oak tree. Still.
And boy, he hit the baseball, the golf ball a mile. You can hit the golf ball a long way.
They don't say that about you, but they talk about your great short game.
Yeah.
Nobody knocks in the two footers like John Shannon.
Me and Scotty Scheffler.
You and Scotty Scheffler. Hope you enjoyed your time with Doug McLean. We'll chat with you next time. And a shout out to Hugh McLarity, who produces this podcast. I was with him in Charlottetown the other day, and he was the one that was recognized for his voice.
Stood me up.
He stood you up? Well, we had a great, great breakfast.
By the way, that whole concept that Prince Edward Island is a small place, it's not that small.
What do you mean it's not that small?
We were at least an hour and a half drive from Charlottetown to Mill River.
Well, you got to get a new driver. Do you take a cab?
Yeah.
That explains it. Back roads. Run that meter up. We'll talk to you next time on 100% Hockey with Millard and Shen.
And potatoes.
Potatoes.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hey there, are you sitting down? Good, because Wayfair's biggest sale of the season is here and you can shop it right from your couch. It's Wayfair's Black Friday in July sale, and it's on now. Right now, you can score up to 80% off everything home at Wayfair. Snag outdoor furniture and decor at up to 60% off. Get area rugs for every room at up to 80% off. And refresh your sleep space with up to 60% off bedroom furniture. Plus, score amazing doorbuster deals and 24-hour surprise flash deals. And get it all with fast and free shipping on everything. Yep, even the big stuff. Right to your door. These are Wayfair's lowest prices of the summer. And did we mention they only last 5 days? So don't wait. Head to Wayfair.com today to score up to 80% off Wayfair's biggest sale of the season before it fizzles out. Shop Wayfair's Black Friday and July sale now through July 28th, only at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Big news! Wayfair's biggest sale of the season is here. It's Black Friday in July. Right now, score up to 80% off everything home at Wayfair. Get our lowest prices of the summer for 5 days only. Plus, amazing doorbuster deals and 24-hour surprise flash deals with fast and free shipping site-wide. So don't wait.
Head to Wayfair.com today to score up to 80% off now through July 28th.
Wayfair, every style, every home.